So basically, we were discussing Paggavisana Sutta, and Paggavisana Sutta, as you can remember, is in Sutta Nipata, which is one of the books in what you call in the Kuddaka Nikaya, where around 15 books are included, and now we are going through Paggavisana Sutta for several months. And almost we have reached the last few verses. And these verses are actually attributed to Paccheka Buddhas. And particularly Paccheka Buddhas are more inclined towards seclusion. And particularly they are living like typical human beings even before they become enlightened. And there are certain situations they come across. And using those situations, they actually take some inspiration. So those are the ones actually interesting here. So how these Paccheka Buddhas are getting inspiration to attain enlightenment. Now in this verse, number 71, if we go through the simple verse, the Pali terms, Sihava saddesu asanta santo vatova jalamhi asajjamanu. Padumangva toyena alimpamano eko chare kaggavisana kappo. If we give the short meaning, sihova saddesu asanta santo, like a lion who is not alarmed among sounds. Vatova jalamhi asajjamano, like the wind not caught in a net. Padumangva toyena alimpamano, like untainted lotus flower. When a lotus is coming through the water, actually it is starting from its muddy bottom, and it is coming up, and ultimately it is blossoming out of the water. It is not tainted by water. Eko chare kagga visana kappu. One should live alone like a rhinoceros horn. So basically for this verse, the situation was due to various incidents happened in a king's life. One king was there, he was quite intelligent. And while he was going through a forest, he came across a lion cub. So this lion cub was born short while ago. But the lioness has now gone out in search of some food. So she has given birth to the cub, and now she has gone in search of food. And certain other people have noticed this lion cub and informed the news to the king. Now, the king has heard that lions are not afraid of any sound. So king wants to check this. So what he did was he approached lion cub and he asked his all army and the other people to make a huge noise. So they started making a huge noise, shouting, and again making huge sounds using the drums. But the lion cub was quite same. I mean, he lion cub didn't notice much about it. For the second time, the king make his armies to make generate a huge sound. So they started trumpeting, and then they started using their drums, and some started shouting. Still lion cub didn't much bother about it. For the third time, the kings asked them to make a huge noise. They did so, and for the third time actually lion cub simply rose his head and simply opened his eyes, looked at it, and again just closed his eyes. That's all. So he, even though he was born on the same day, he was not afraid of sounds. So this is something the king has noticed. It was something interesting for him. So this king is an intelligent person, and he was having certain attributes of spirituality. And he is taking this whole scenario as a inspiration to his own spiritual growth. So now he understood what is mentioned, that lions are not afraid of sounds, is really true. It's not only true for the very grown up huge lions or massive lions, but even the very same day born lion cub, still he is not afraid of any sound. So this is something interesting. So lion is considered as the most strongest or most steady minded animal in the jungle. And so king wants to really check that, and he found it is true, and he is connecting this finding with his own situation. And he found that he is quite often getting afraid. So now he is having a kind of a wish. When am I going to be unalarmed, not frightened, like a lion? So this is not just by keeping an army and keeping bodyguards that you become unalarmed, unafraid. But by conquering the real causes, or conquering all the defilements which is causing the agitation, which is causing the fear in one's mind. So this is the line that King was thinking. When am I going to be fearless? By conquering all these fear causing, agitation causing roots or the causes. Actually, that is nothing but craving and all these ignorance and all sorts of roots. Defilements. So the king is now directing his mind, when am I going to have such a fearless, unalarmed nature in my mind? By completely uprooting craving and other hindrances. So now he has a kind of an inclination towards such kind of a practice. Now, we also might have come across these kinds of situations, but problem is we haven't thought about like that. So we have noticed the lion cub, probably we might have even made some noise. He didn't even bother about it. But we don't think like this, like the king now thinking. So this is where we are not that matured in that sense. So here actually these are very natural incidents, and we can understand how some intelligent people, some grown up people, even these little incidents, ordinary incidents, they are using to promote their inner qualities or promote spirituality or to get some inspiration. So this is something interesting, and so this is what thought by the king. And now he is proceeding in the jungle, and he come across a kind of a beach area. Now after passing the jungle, he coming to a open area, and there he found certain fishermen. So they have gone to fishing, and the nets, now they are trying to dry up, and they are keeping that bound to several trees. And now because of the spreaded nature, now the nets are being dried, and enough wind is going through the net. Even though it is a net, the wind is not being caught in the net. Now typically, if an animal is going trying to go through, if a bird is going trying to go through, if a fish is going to go through, they can't. They're being caught by the net. So that is why it is called a net. So if one is putting a net to a group of animals, so the whole group of animals can be caught. If one is putting a net to a group of fishes, so the whole group of fishes may get caught. So similarly, so a net is to catch animals, so catch certain person. But here, king is noticing that from many directions, many strong winds are coming, but the net can't catch it, or the wind is not getting caught by the net. Now he is using this also in different manner. So even when there are different kinds of interesting things, without being caught by them, without attached to them, without stuck with them, is it possible for me to go through them? Now he's assumed that one's mind is like a wind. So different nets are there. The sights are like a net. Sounds are like a net. Smells are like a net. Tastes are like a net. Tactile sensations are like a net. And even thoughts are like a net. And what happens to us is we get caught to each and every net. Whenever a net of sights are available, we immediately get caught to them. And we start to think about it. We entangle with that sights of net. And we start to mentally proliferate about it. And maybe anger, maybe craving, maybe frustration, maybe jealousy, all sorts of different kinds of what you call the defilements are now arising because we are being caught to these net of sights. And on the other hand, if there are different sounds, maybe beautiful songs, beautiful melodies, so they are also like a net. And we get caught to them and we are attached to them. We get caught to them and we start to think about them and our defilements start to increase. We are always being caught by the net of sounds, maybe songs, maybe melodies, music. And there are different smells. Those are quite interesting. And we get caught to them as well. And we start to think about them. Our mind get occupied with such smells and we are going after them. And our mind is quite attached to such smells. And similarly, there are various, tastes. And we like to have such tastes, enjoy such tastes. And we are getting caught to such tastes. And we are always thinking about such tastes. And we wish to have such tastes. And we even promote such tastes. And we even tell others also that such kind of a hotel is there, such kind of a delicious food is there. So likewise, we being delighted by such tastes. So more and more we do so, our mind get occupied with such tastes and we are being entangled or attached or being caught by such tastes. Now this is the net of tastes in that manner. Now when it comes to various tactile sensations, touching, that is also difficult to overcome. So when someone is there, if we like his or her touch, so we get entangled. We like to have such touch. We like to enjoy such touch. We get attached to such touching sensation, tactile sensation. And it is a kind of a net we always get for being caught. And the interesting part is the mind. There are different mental objects. Mind objects appear again and again in the mind. Without recognizing them as mental objects, we give value to such mental objects and we actually personify such mental objects. We attribute them to a person. This is my mother, this is my father, this is my daughter, this is my brother, this is my son, this is my husband, this is my wife. So likewise, each and every mental object, we are assigned to a particular person. We are personifying them. We are giving a value and we make it live. So it is no more a mental object, rather it is something or it is someone. So ultimately we get caught. So these are the net of mental objects in a way. So if we come even little deeper, now our consciousness and the name and form, vijnana and namarupa, are always having such relationship. Always our consciousness is being caught by the net of name and form. Vijnana is being caught by the net of namarupa, net of name and form. So the name and form is appear like the net, as the tracking object, as the grabbing object. So always vijnana, consciousness being caught there. It become helpless. It become kind of a slave in that net net of thoughts or net of name and form. So we can't even think about a situation where the consciousness is available but not being caught with anything. Vijnana is very clean, very clear, not established, quite spacious, and not being caught with anything. Not being caught especially with name and form. And we can't even think something like that. So after recognizing that wind not being caught by the net, so this king is now having kind of an inspiration, kind of an objective. When am I also not being caught to any of these different objects? Sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations and mind objects. Is it possible for me to go through, pass through without being caught? Without being caught by any anger, without being caught by any lust, without being caught by any ignorance. So this is how he is sort of directing his mind, having kind of an inspiration in his mind. And as he is going through, now he is coming to another level. And after he is passing this beach area, now he is approaching another riverside. And there he found that there's a huge wind is going through. And as a result of that, certain lotus flowers are bending and they are now even touching the water surface. And once the wind is passed by, then again these lotus flowers are rising up and again bloomed. They are not being bothered by or being tainted by the water. So as you know, lotuses are born in the water, on the muddy water, and they come up. They rise up from the surface of water. And they are not being tainted by water. So it is a very powerful simile that Buddha quite often express. How a lotus flower being born in a muddy water, not being tainted by that muddy water. And actually Buddha himself recognize or introduce himself like such a water. Because in this whole human realm, whole animal realm, all Brahma realm, all Deva realm. So majority of people, majority of beings are quite tainted. They are with lot of dust. They are with lot of defilements. They are always entangled with various defilements. So among all this defiled world, polluted world, Buddha is such a person born to that world and then rise up from that world and sort of shines without any pains, shines without any defilements. But he is fully enlightened. His mind is very pure. His mind is untainted. So the simile given to as an analogy to the Buddha is this lotus flower. The lotus is also born in a muddy water. Slowly it is growing up and come out of the muddy water. And it is blossoming, spreading a very pleasant fragrance all around the area, very beautiful, without being tainted by muddy water. So this is a very interesting natural simile with the highlights. And here also this particular king notice that these lotuses or lotus flowers are not being tainted by muddy water. So they are blossomed. And they are spreading a fragrance, so beautiful. And now he is thinking, when am I also not being tainted by the world? Like such tortoises, born in the muddy water, not being tainted by muddy water. When am I going to be maintaining such a purified mind? While all the other people, all the other beings are being tainted, being deluded, being with polluted minds, when am I going to have a unpolluted, untainted, serene, calm, pure state of mind? So this is how he is inspiring himself. So he is actually using very ordinary kind of situations, incidents, just to inspire himself. And with these inspirations, now his mind is more attuned towards having such a mindset. Not alarmed by any kind of a situation, like a lion cub or lion. Not attached with any kinds of signs, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations or mental objects. Not attached to anything, not being caught up with any of those. And again, not tainted among the tainted world. Being quite pure among the impure world. Being unpolluted, very pure among the polluted beings. So when am I going to have such a state of mind? When am I going to have such a pure mind? When am I going to have completely eradicate the causes, the craving, ignorance and all sorts of defilements? So this is how he is driving himself. He has certain incident, he used those as inspirations. Now he is sort of using them as a kind of a motivation towards the Nibbana. Now he give up his kingdom and he start to practice Dhamma. And with less time, according to the commentary, so this king has become a Paccheka Buddha. After he became a Paccheka Buddha, so he is uttering this verse, explaining how he was inspired by these ordinary experiences and used them as very interesting, significant inspirations for his own spiritual growth. And driven by that desire, Kusala Chanda, or we can, another way we can say as the Chanda Iddipada. So now he is continuing his practice and ultimately attain a Paccheka Buddha. So these inspirations therefore sometimes help us to continue our practice. So Chanda Iddipada. So you have a kind of a desire. So this is a fruitful desire, this is a useful desire. So you are having kind of a desire, when am I going to have a pure mind? When am I going to have an unalarmed mind? Nowadays actually there are many difficult situations the whole world is going through. And we never know what's going to happen. And sometimes we get alarmed by the situation. So you know now the situation in the Ukraine and the Europe. So people are alarmed by the threats. While in Sri Lanka about several years ago, so we were alarmed by the terrorist attacks. We don't know when there would be the next bomb blast. So the people are alarmed. But when someone is free from the causes of fear, even when there are things are burning or blasting and all sorts of things, so such people are not alarmed. So that is a kind of a different approach. It is not by keeping a force guard, bodyguards or any of those, or any of such external army, but rather by the developed mind. One is not being alarmed by the alarming situations. Even though the alarming situations, frightful situations are there, he's internally peaceful, internally unshaken. So when am I going to have such a mentality? Such a drawn mind. So one is having such inclination. So one is keeping such inspiration. One is keeping such desire. You also have to reach such a matured state, unshakability. And then while I am now being constantly being attached to various things, always getting caught to various things, when I see a beautiful sight, I get caught to that. I start think about it. I get attached to it. Whenever I listen to certain music, I get attached to it. I get caught to it. And for several hours, I start to murmur that song. So this is how currently my mind get caught. When am I going to have a mind which doesn't do that? So these are in a way very interesting way of looking at the Dhamma. How one is motivating oneself towards the growth. So it is very natural phenomena or outside ordinary phenomena that we encounter, but one is using them as an inspiration. And then the last one, among all these difficult situations, while all others are going after sensuality, sensual gratification, so how am I going to have a pure mind? Amidst all the corrupted world, am I going to have a pure mind? How can I have such a pure mind? Amidst all these beings whose mind are completely defiled, always defiled with lust, always defiled with anger, always defiled with sort of worries, unkind kind of nature, when am I going to have a kind of a pure mind? It is not that you are going to completely cure the whole other world and then you going to have a pure mind. It will never happen. While the whole world is burning, how are you going to have Nibbana? Or how are you going to experience kind of a calm, inner peace? Not by simply achieving the outside peace, but by achieving the inner peace, internal peace. While the outside is burning, how are you going to have inner peace? So these are not easy in a way, but this is how this king and this particular Paccheka Buddha has given us a kind of an example how he has motivated himself. Use these kind of factors as a driven forces, as Chanda Iddipada, to drive him towards the perfection, towards the enlightenment. So these are therefore quite interesting even for ourselves. And while we are dealing with the whole world, we can also ask from ourselves, when am I going to have a very pure mind? When am I not going to be afraid of anything, any situation? When am I going to not attach with anything? Rather, I am maintaining calmness, unattached, non-grasping state of mind. When am I going to have such thing? So I'm asking, you're asking that. So that help us to a little achieve it in a way. So such kind of an innocent and motivation, driving may be helpful for us to reach the goal. And once someone has reached the goal, actually then there is no such driving. And that is sometimes called as Brahmacharyesana Patipassaddha. So one has kind of an asana. Someone is searching for something. Someone is searching a kind of a situation which is possible where he is not getting alarmed. He is searching for a situation where he is not getting stuck. He is searching for a situation where his mind is always pure. When one achieves it, the Buddha mentioned, so such asana, such search, investigation is now come to a fulfillment. Now he is peaceful. So those are interesting ways that Buddha explained the Dhamma in many different angles, helping us to look at it in a different way and to inspire us to develop or practice ourselves. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Avasarai Bhante.
Yeah.
There are 7 questions today. First one. This is based on the Dhamma sermon, but it's a general question. Dear Bhante, after touching upon the stillness, quietness a year ago, when now I do the office work, meaning talking to people, writing documents, etc., I can see that a world is created by the 6 senses. I experience that I am not getting inside it. My preference is to answer and get things done without getting inside the world, Bhante. I really hope you can understand what I am experiencing here. I feel at times it happens automatic and I am an observer. My preference is to retain as the observer. Challenge with living in the worldly life is people taking things so seriously that I need to remind myself that they are all impermanent. In the surface, it seems things are calm, but yet my heart sometimes asks, isn't this what Buddha asked to go to the forest? Your advice much appreciated. With metta, that's the end of the question.
So I can welcome you to the forest, but forest also has some problems. I mean, I'm not living alone in the forest. So we have around 35 monks. Enough trouble is there. So by the way, your approach is quite interesting. So, I mean, as we continue our work or as we are dealing with others, it is always challenging. It's challenging in the sense, I mean, people are with different attitudes and they are trying to satisfy themselves, and they have their own priorities, and sometimes they request some sort of say speciality towards them, and they if they don't receive it from us, then they get upset. And so, like I said, very difficult. I mean, very different. People are different. They are with different temperaments. And again, we are dealing with different personalities. So actually, these are the ones really help us to understand our own defilements. So I think you are doing it already. So how, among all these different personalities, among all these different situations, how are we going to maintain undisturbed or unshaken mind? It's quite challenging. This is pretty, pretty challenging. And but the beauty is that slowly we are improving. Actually, I can remember, just to share some personal experiences. So while at Nisarnavane, so I mean, I was given certain responsibilities several years ago, and I am a person with sometimes getting angry. So even though you might think that I am not that kind of an angry person, but I often get angry when someone is not behaving the way I like, not respecting or not doing their duties, and sometimes when the way I want is not being implemented, it's a completely different thing being implemented. So I can remember, after coming to my kuti, so I spent some time several years ago sort of burning with anger, and so I spent some time. But later, by the way, I continue the practice and I observe this anger in the mind, and slowly start to let it go. And slowly now I can understand. Now it is less anger, or now less burning. And when anger arises, I can notice it, and less disturbance. So likewise, it is not that we are going to get rid of these kind of situations or challenges. Rather, we have to go through these situations. And we have to endure those situations, and we have to recognize our own weaknesses while being with the others. How are we reacting? How our minds are reacting, and how we are sometimes misrepresenting or misinterpreting the situations. We are adding our own likes and dislikes to the picture, so that we get kind of preconceived ideas about certain people. So many, many things are there for us to learn from these different situations. So those are, in a way, kind of a exploration about our own self, because someone else can't show these things. Actually, we ourselves know very well about ourselves. So all these difficult situations, other colleagues, other people are, in a way, helping us to arouse in ourselves these different situations, mentalities. And if we are sort of skillful, then we can be mindful about these different states arising in the mind. And then we can recognize they are also coming and going. These different mentalities are not permanent, and we don't need to consider them as me or mine, belong to me or belong to myself. They don't really represent me. So likewise, we are trying to disclaim them. You are trying to have a kind of separation or distance from them. And then you can actually observe them with the equanimous mind. So that actually helps. So now you observe these different or difficult situations with a distant mind. You are becoming a distant observer, unentangled observer, unparticipated observation, or non-judgmental observation. So this way, in a way, actually we are able to avoid promoting these situations, aggravating these situations, and it helps to let it go. So more and more we let go, we more and more our inner peace is growing. Internally we become stable and not being triggered by external triggers. We are able to maintain some stability in ourselves, integrity in the mind. And even if we are being shocked, we can quickly recover. So that is where the resilience work. So we also sometimes get shocked. Certain situations are really penetrating to the mind and we can't maintain our stability. We also get shocked, but quickly can recover. So that is interesting part. So therefore, it is always this kind of path that we have to go through. It is not getting rid or escaping from the situations. Rather, when certain situation is unavoidable and certain situation is coming on your way, and if you understand, okay, this is the duty assigned to me, this is the task assigned to me, it is not that I asked for such situation, but it is now coming on my way, let me go through it, let me bear it, let me learn from it. So likewise, you have to take an approach, and that helps us to mature ourselves. Yeah.
Avasara Bhante, question number 2 of 7. This is mindful sitting. Venerable Sir, this report is regarding my sitting practice. When I start, I use the technique to scan the body a bit and make sure that I am aware of the body sensations to confirm that I am in the present moment. Afterwards, I try to observe various sensations in the upper body and I can grasp the breath. Then I observe the breath and get to know the differences between in-breath and out-breath and many sensations around the nostrils where I keep my focus on. About 5 to 10 minutes of continuous application of this technique, the breath starts to become subtle and fades away. My mind distracts, but I could bring it back by becoming aware of the sensations that I'm used to. Once the breath fades away, I enter a relaxed state like a space and stay for 5 to 10 minutes. Then the awareness slowly comes to my sitting posture. It is a very, very gradual process and I observe the space that I am in when the breath faded away, shrinks and concentrates towards my body as something coming back to the body. The awareness comes inside the body deeper and deeper and concentrates around the sensations of my sitting posture, mainly the pressure on my back from the floor. It seems going deeper and deeper and never ending. During this time, various thoughts come and go, but my focus is mainly on this body posture. Since this is happening over a period of time in all sitting sessions, should I focus on the thoughts rather than the body posture? Thank you for the guidance. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually you can recognize kind of a relationship. So probably when you are not mindful about various thoughts or emotions arising in the mind, it can cause certain tension in the body. So both ways are possible. Either if you are, you observing various different sensations available in the body. So when you are observing these different sensations, actually it helps to overcome different thoughts as well. Either way you can use. Different thoughts are there. So you can observe thoughts and not promoting them. Rather you are being aware of those thoughts. And then you allow them to pass away and then the mental clarity is there. Calmness is there. So the body also have to become calm. If not, you have to change the posture and relax yourself. On the other hand, if there is tension in the body, so you can recognize that tension and you can allow it to pass through. You can change the posture or whatever the way. You can relax yourself. Then the mind is also getting relaxed. So both are possible. Both are to be carried out. Actually, both mind and the body have to be in fairly unentangled, fairly relaxed. Not with tension, so that towards that we have to move forward. So we have to continue our practice towards that direction. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 7. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, Can you please explain what Sakkayaditti is as applicable to a mindfulness practitioner who has built a regular practice over a time period and wants to further improve and seek liberation in this life itself? I think most of us in the program share this positive attitude and appreciate Bhante's explanation from this context. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, as we continue our practice, you can actually recognize how we make a self. So sometimes using the body, sometimes using feelings, sometimes using perceptions, sometimes using our creativity, our skills, our thoughts, different mental states, and with different kinds of knowing, say using eyes, ears, nose, tongue, etc. So as we are using our senses, we create a self. So that we need to recognize. And there we can recognize, okay, at this time I am making a self. Using the body, I make a self. Using the feelings, I make a self. Using perceptions, I make a self. So likewise, you are observing these different self-making or self-creations, self-appropriations. And that is where we promote Sakkayaditti, a personality, a person, a soul, a self. And mindfulness practice help us to recognize this self-creation, self-appropriation, making a self, and to eliminate that or to disclaim that, not to promote that, but to recognize how these five aggregates are impermanent. There is nothing there. I mean, there is nothing substantial there. So how it is being oppressed by this continuous arising and passing away. So more and more you understand that, so then the self-making, I-making, self-appropriation, all sort of this ego-centered thinking going to reduce. So this is what we need to continue, and actually that is what we are trying to do in the whole mindfulness practice or the development of Satipatthana.
Question number 4 of 7. This is general question. Guru Swami Vance, can you please explain Ajatamba and Mahiddhava and teach how one can include that in meditation practice? With much merits, thanking you.
Yeah, in the morning also in the Sinhala session, we discussed this. So Ajatta Bahidda actually can interpret in different ways. So one approach, simple approach is that, so you use certain internal phenomena to understand the reality. So for example, you are observing various element characteristics inside, and then you understand there is no person here, there is no being here, there is no man, woman here. Instead, what is available is nothing but operation of different elements. And once you recognize that, once you have a good understanding about that, you can easily apply that to external person, external phenomena. So in the outside world, whole outside physical world, is also there is no person, there is no being, there is no man or woman. So there are also what is available is nothing but the operation of different elements. So now Ajjata Bahidda operates in that way. So you use certain contemplations to understand or develop wisdom using internal phenomena. And once you gain fair amount of insight, you can apply that insight inferentially to the outside. So there you understand, okay, the outside also there is no person, being man, woman, rather nothing but it is simply elements. So this is one approach. Assume that you are doing Vedananupassana. There also you understand, okay, internally you are experiencing different feelings. So you have fair understanding about feelings. And now you can apply the same understanding to outside as well. Outside, I mean, when you consider other people, they also go through such similar feelings. So as you go through, the others also go through. So likewise, you inferentially can get an understanding. So that is one approach, that is the most common approach, and also a better approach. On the other hand, some people interpret, like when you are observing one phenomena, even inside the body, now that becomes your primary focus or your attention, a focus attention, and all the rest become external. So that is also another kind of explanation. So what you are focused is considered as the internal Ajjata, and everything else, what we are not focusing, what we are not paying attention, becomes the outside, Bahidda. So these are the two ways that we can interpret. But in terms of the practice, in terms of the understanding, the first scenario is much useful, because you go through a certain amount of practice using your own body, using your own experience, different your own feelings, perceptions, mental formations, etc. So that understanding helps to apply the same understanding to the outside as well. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 7. This is a general question. I am very grateful to you for explaining Lord Buddha's discourses so clearly, and for the guided meditation sessions in mindfulness that have helped me immensely in many ways through the last more than three years. I have a query about the meaning of the word Dhamma as meant in Dhammanupassana. And it looks like a series of questions. The first one, does Dhamma mean the truth as an axiom, a universal phenomena? By Dhammanupassana, do we eventually realize the true nature of reality? Does Dhamma also mean phenomena we come to realize experientially? Is the exercise of Dhammanupassana, in other words, a pattern recognition? In that sense, is the attainment of Nibbana recognition of the true nature of the patterns of suffering and the solution to it? I would be very grateful if you could give your insight into this query.
In Dhammanupassana, different phenomena is the one that we are trying to observe. So, for example, in the hindrances, Nivarana Pabba, we are observing hindrances. In the Khanda Pabba, we are observing different aggregates. In the Ayatana Pabba, we are observing sense bases. And in the Bojjhangas, enlightenment factors, we are observing. And once it reached the Four Noble Truths, so we are applying the understanding and trying to understand the Four Noble Truths. So basically, I can agree with you that we are understanding the Buddha's teaching. That sense also is true. But in order to understand the teaching, we are using different phenomena. So those are the five aggregates, hindrances, and all these things. Actually, we can collectively say as five aggregates. So all five aggregates are being given enough attention. Sense bases are given enough attention. Hindrances are given enough attention. Enlightenment factors are being given enough attention. Noble truths are being given enough attention. So as you mentioned correctly, so this helps, or this observation, this investigation helps to understand deeply about what is true, what is reality. So that is, in a way, we can say as the Dhamma from other term. So that is the Dhamma that Buddha taught. By going through understanding all these conditioned phenomena, by understanding their true nature, then we understand we have deep insights that we can consider as the Dhamma, as the Buddha's teaching.
Question number 6 of 7. This is a general question. Venerable Sir, often in the mornings I have much more agitation than evenings that I'm subjected to, because while I try to observe mindfully and objectively, I think this is at some level overwhelming. Should I resort to some sort of tranquilizing practice, such as chanting or yoga, so they at least don't affect my daily functioning? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, that's a good idea, because we can recognize, okay, a certain period of time I am good in mindfulness, my concentration is good, my mind is not agitated, so that is good understanding. And on the other times, my mind is more agitated, I'm with less mindfulness, less concentration, my mind is restless. So that is a good understanding we actually have. So with that understanding, actually, we can take some preventive measures, corrective measures. So as you said, maybe yoga or whatever the things, to calm down the mind, to instead of being restless, to calm down ourselves. And instead of being unmindful, to develop certain amount of mindfulness. So yoga and all these exercises are quite helpful to, again, come back to our senses, come back to our body, improve body awareness, which helps to improve self-awareness. So therefore, your approach is quite correct. And having such a reflection about our own self, or having such a reflection about how our mind operates throughout the day, and recognizing those, loopholes, or recognizing those weak areas, is quite necessary. And those are helpful to the development, to the progress.
Question number 7 of 8, general question. Dear Bhante, these days we hear a lot of horror stories about the war in Ukraine. Similar to last year when COVID was killing tens of thousands, the news brings sympathy, frustration, agitation, fear, and many negative feelings to us the whole day. It is simple to shut the TV, mobile phone, and stay away from all these. However, we still need to associate work colleagues, answer questions from children, etc. So shutting off and becoming immune to the situation is not an option for us. How can we use mindfulness practically to mitigate these emotional thought constructs? I am trying to let these emotions and thoughts come in and acknowledge that I have them. Wait without extending the thinking until they go away and acknowledge that they have passed away. Is this a correct practice? Much merits for your valuable guidance. That's the end of the question.
Actually, we can be mindful how often that we are watching the news. And we can check, is it really necessary? Because our minds are so attached to this kind of frustrations, being uncertain and going after certain kind of frustrations. Our mind has such kind of an inclination. We like to get frightened. We like the excitement. We like the adventures to see how things are destroyed, how the wars are going on, rather than simply being aware of the peace. So we like to get agitated. So this, we need to understand that our inner inclinations are there towards watching news, towards getting agitated, being excited, being adventurous. So these are certain inner harmful drives or harmful traits we have. So once we recognize that, rather than promoting that, so we can see, okay, I have seen the news in the morning. Now no need to see. Probably maybe on the next morning or maybe in the evening, I can watch. That's it. No need to watch movie or watch news again and again at every half an hour. Then I am agitating myself too much, not necessary. So let me get updated in the morning, okay, or maybe in the evening. I am getting updated myself. That's enough. So therefore, we have to have some restraint in watching the news.
Question number 8 of 9. This one is a general question. Venerable Bhante, I would like to share an experience and get your advice. I have been practicing mindfulness for a few years now, and my focus is breathing and walking. I am able to stay in the emptiness for a while and observe. This experience is not while I am meditating, but rather when I am sleeping. I have heard that Bhante Dhammadeva mentioned several times that there is a child in Melbourne who says that they know when they are sleeping. I also came across this situation multiple times. My experience is when I'm feeling tired and sleepy during the day, I would sometimes sit down and decide to have a quick nap. When I start, I can feel that my body gets comfortable and basically goes to sleep. But my mind is very awake, to the point that I know that my body has gone to sleep and is hard to move anything. But I can hear the noises outside, even the other people in the house speaking, watching TV, etc. But I'm not able to move any of my body and not able to respond. I'm able to stay like this for about 15 to 20 minutes until my body does not feel tired or sleepy. Then I would wake up and go about my normal work. This has happened several times. I have to actually admit that this is quite a useful skill to have, but I feel that this is due to my practice, where I can stay in the emptiness, hearing those noises, etc., but not responding to anything. Is this the same thing that is happening or something else? I appreciate your kind comments. Thank you very much, Theravan Sayanai. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, and when you are able to maintain that mental peace or peace of the mind, actually you don't need to have a kind of a really drowsy, sleepy mood. Even and the body is resting, getting enough rest, and you are keeping your mind rest but not sleep. Therefore, that's why maybe the Buddha only spent 2 hours in all his 45 years. He spent just two hours per day for his sleep, because his mind is on rest. even though he's working and all these things, his mind is at rest. So therefore, what your approach is correct. So different things are happening, but your mind is at rest. So maybe in the emptiness, mind is not bothered and you are able to maintain that calmness of the mind. Therefore, you can continue. Your approach is quite correct.
Question number 9. This is the last question. General question. Dear Bhante, I dedicate hours to practice, but yet I'm not doing the walking and sitting, although I have finished other work and nothing to attend. Yet my mind wanders, and yet times I walk in the house up and down. How can I get dedicated to decline to practice with metta? That's the end of the question. I'm not sure if that made sense, Bhante.
Actually, if you have done much of a practice before, then you can turn towards this kind of impromptu kind of practice where you are not following a particular schedule, but you can keep your mind unattached or mind dwelling in the emptiness. So that is possible. That is appropriate. This is not much harmful. But on the other hand, if you are not doing such formal practice at your early stages and you are not developing mindfulness, not developing concentration, and not developing insights, so then it is a different situation. So actually at the beginning, you need fair amount of practice. You need to develop mindfulness. You need to develop fair amount of concentration. That concentration is necessary to develop insights. So some amount of work is involved at the beginning. So therefore, I invite you to do such a formal practice and get involved with such practice, and later actually you can have some amount of rest. Yeah. Okay, Chandra. We have to wind up. I have to go.
Yes, sorry. Bhante, that's the end of the questions anyway. So I'll wrap up very quickly. First of all, we'd like to thank Bhante and pass on our merits for helping us with all this valuable advice. Secondly, to the people working behind the scenes to make this happen, seen and unseen. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, we could not continue. With that, I'd like to end the program. Theravan Sarnai.
Theravan Sarnai. Okay.